This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association to showcase the career paths within the meat processing industry. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn, building the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives into the future. ICMJ does this through a series of events across Australia and overseas. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au. Tim Ryan grew up around agriculture, but he wasn't sure if it was where he wanted to start his career. That is, until he was reintroduced to ag by ICMJ. Now Tim is based in Singapore, working to open up new opportunities for Australian meat exports. I'm Amy McCosker, and I started my conversation with Tim by asking about how he found his way back to agriculture.
I suppose my roots in the red meat industry go back to growing up on a sheep property in central Victoria. I studied more finance and economics at uni, but then still spent my holidays working on the farm and working in an abattoir nearby. So I kind of kept a finger on the pulse and stayed connected. But really when I was studying, I wasn't really pursuing a career in ag. We'd come through a fair few droughts when I was growing up, and the appeal wasn't really there. So I was looking elsewhere, thinking banking or finance as a more viable pursuit. But then I kind of stumbled across ICMJ in my final year of uni. And I suppose that really triggered me to reevaluate what exactly I wanted to do.
What do you think it was about ICMJ at that time in your life? What did you get from that experience that turned your head back to that ag sector, do you think?
I think it really opened my eyes up to the breadth of opportunities. I think as someone growing up on a farm, you kind of think the industry at times stops at the farm gate without realizing there's a whole range of roles throughout the rest of the industry and supply chain that you don't necessarily see because you don't really have exposure to it. So I think that was probably the biggest realization when I was sitting in the audience at that ICMJ conference and hearing from leaders across the industry. It kind of just triggers in your head that there's a lot more to it than just the farming side. So I suppose that was really the first point. And then I stayed involved with ICMJ for a number of years. And it had a great influence and gave me a lot of exposure to other parts of the industry as well.
So how did you get from that point of, you know, the realization that there's a bit more behind agriculture than what you'd initially thought to where you are today?
Well, I was actually at the conference. I was sitting in the audience and saw a presentation from my future employer. They're delivering a presentation on I think it was the beef projections or the sheep projections for the industry, and that kind of brought together my interest in ag, but also that kind of economics background that I had from study. And so they kind of came together, and through the ICMJ conference, I basically met the right people, asked the right questions, and followed them up, and then when I graduated, I got a job with Meat and Livestock Australia. Been with MLA for about 6 years or so now. Firstly, I spent several years working in their market information and insights team, and that was really, I suppose, bringing my economics background along, and that was really interesting, and that was based in Sydney. But for the last few years, I've transitioned across to a role in Singapore. And now I focus on really promoting trade growth and specifically looking at trade market access issues and how we can make it easier for Australian exporters to trade with the world.
So could you give us some insight into, I suppose, what's the day-to-day work that you do that achieves those lofty goals of opening trade up internationally? Like, I imagine that's that's the end goal, but what do you do to make that happen?
Yeah, so I suppose taking it back to basics, the trade component of our industry is really important. We produce a lot of product, but the vast majority of that product, say 3/4 of our beef and sheep meat, still finds a home in an export market. So firstly, trade's really important for the industry, but also because we're so reliant on it, having reliable access to export markets and having access to a large number of customers is really important to maintain the bottom line of the industry, and particularly in today's climate, where you've got disruption from trade wars, COVID-19, a range of fronts, having access to many markets and facing few barriers in those markets is really important. So on a day-to-day, I suppose there's a few aspects to the pursuit of improved market access, and market access barriers can come in a whole range of forms. In their most basic, I suppose, they could be a trade ban due to an animal health issue, and we've seen a few big instances of that in recent history. But it could also be various tariffs that are applied to Australian products in export markets, or there could be quotas which restrict the volume. Or increasingly, they could be what we call non-tariff barriers, and they're all the technical requirements that we have to meet when we sell into export markets. So on a day-to-day, fortunately, we don't have many animal health issues in Australia because we've got a great standing internationally and integrity systems to back our animal health status up. So the majority of our kind of day-to-day priorities are really looking at removing tariffs, quotas, and non-tariff barriers. But these things don't happen overnight. Some of these could be a work in progress that's been in place for the last decade, for instance.
That's exactly what I was thinking about as you were saying that, was I imagine that decades of effort goes into these relationships. And then I suppose on our end, when we just read the media, we get up and read the newspaper or turn the news on, we can see global leaders making, you know, pretty quick decisions about trade, and obviously it can change the entire dynamic of the Australian market overnight. Like, we can see decisions that can have such broad brush effects. It must be really difficult from your end to be doing all of these things behind the scenes and then have such big announcements, you know, come and change everything.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why we can't be too complacent in the market access front. I think on a whole, with Australia, or the Australian red meat industry, has got fairly favourable and positive market access. A lot of countries recognise the safety and high quality nature of our product, and we can sell into those markets. But particularly in the current climate, I think if you look at the politics of the day, things can change quite quickly. And having access to a lot of markets is really important. So if something happens in one market, say at the moment there's a lot of countries that are in recession because of COVID-19, if something happens in one of those markets and the demand isn't there, we can quickly pivot and find a market that is in a position to take that product. So I think wherever you look, there's risk, be it political, economic, trade-related. There's risk everywhere, and it's probably as high as it has been in the last two decades. So having access to many places we can sell into is really important in that matter.
Sometimes in the media, they'll talk about how particular trade agreements are used as bargaining chips in negotiations not even related to the commodity that they might affect. Is that something that you see much? Like, do you see the impact of I suppose, other issues internationally affecting the red meat trade?
Yeah, so I suppose looking at free trade agreements specifically, and we've been really fortunate over the last two decades to have a series of governments that have pursued them. But in terms of bargaining chips, it is a two-way bargain, and it's a negotiation, process. So it is always going to be give and take on both sides when it comes to those deals. Fortunately, I think our governments have been able to negotiate. We haven't had too many sticking points on most of our FTAs to date. So if you look at our list, we've got some of our key export markets like Japan, Korea, China, the United States, and ASEAN, all having pretty good free trade deals with Australia that have had really good gains for the Australian red meat industry. Most of those were fairly straightforward. So I think Australia's been quite pragmatic in how it's approached trade deals, and we've had some really good wins on the board.
Tim, just to start with, like obviously later in this conversation, we're going to get into some, into some pretty specific information about different trade deals and that sort of thing. So would you be able to give us just, I suppose, a quick synopsis, a quick dive into the history of the trade of Australian red meat internationally?
Yeah, sure, Amy. That's a really good question. So I suppose Australia's always been a fairly major exporter of red meat products. Back in the early 20th century, we export a lot of product back to within the Commonwealth, particularly to the likes of the UK, and in even post the Second World War, Australia was a major supplier to the world of meat products, be it back to Europe and the UK, or be it into Japan. We've always been a major supplier, and more or less over the decades, we've typically been within the top three when it comes to the biggest exporters of beef and sheep meat. So trade's always been quite central to the Australian red meat industry. But increasingly, as we expand our production base much faster than our domestic population is growing, all that growth is shifting into export markets. So it's important, and it's increasingly important that we have access to these export markets. But there's been some major events over the decades that have highlighted, I suppose, the gains from market access, but also the downside when market access hasn't worked in our favour. If you think about the 1970s, and this was well before my time, but there was a major global beef crash which affected the likes of the US and other North American and European beef producers, but also Australia. But at the time, there wasn't the protective measures to prevent certain beef producing countries around the world from putting up barriers to the likes of imported Australian beef. So at the same time as the beef crash, there's a lot of trade barriers put up and protective barriers that made it even more damaging to Australia, because we were hit twice. We lost premiums because prices crashed, and then we lost our markets because they put up protective barriers. So that's really an example of the downside risk when we don't have the rules-based trade order that we do today. But if you fast forward to the 1990s, we saw the establishment of the WTO. And then throughout the 2000s, we saw a series of trade agreements that Australia was part of, which went beyond what the WTO delivered and removed even more trade barriers that our products faced. So if you're looking at, say, the last two decades, the barriers that we faced have been gradually removed or made lower. And at the same time, we've seen this very substantial growth in our red meat trade, both in terms of the overall tonnage that we're exporting, but also the price premiums we're getting for that product are far more attractive now than what they were a couple of decades ago.
So are there any key points in that history that you mentioned there where we've seen like a flashpoint or a key moment in the role that Australia plays in international trade?
Good question, Amy. I think there's probably, just off the top of my head, two key events or shifts that we've seen in the last couple of decades that are really tied in market access issues that have fed directly into the red meat industry. So firstly, going back to the early to mid 2000s, the United States had a case of BSE, and for a number of years, it faced either an outright ban or very heavy restrictions in exporting product into the Japan and Korean beef markets. So, for a number of years, Japan and Korea have been a major market for us and the US, and the two of us have really competed head to head. In those years when the US was basically blocked out of the market, Australia built up a huge trade with both those countries and really cemented itself as the supplier of choice to a lot of those consumers, and built up a very strong brand and consumer perception that even today, with the US back in both those markets, still positions us very strongly. So consumers still see us as being a supplier of high quality, safe beef into both those markets. So that was a clear market access issue. It was really, unfortunately for the Americans, to their detriment, but at the same time positioned Australia very well to capitalise on that trade opportunity. Another key shift, and this has really been, I suppose, for all products right around the world, but another key shift for us has been the emergence of China as a major meat buyer on the global market. So Australia was fairly early on in the piece trading with China. We were one of the first countries to have a trade deal similar to New Zealand with the likes of China. And we were one of the major suppliers of both beef and sheep meat as the market was emerging about 10 years ago. And for a number of years, we had a large market share in China. But as China has grown, it's really grown beyond the means of just Australia, and a lot of other suppliers are trading with China. And China has now emerged as the single largest beef market, largest sheep meat market, pork and poultry market in the world over the last few years. So it's really become another major force on global markets affecting all products.
It's obviously interesting and extremely important to reflect on the history, but let's pivot and look to the future. You know, I suppose with that history in mind, looking forward from now onwards, what do you see as the key, opportunities and challenges for the Australian meat industry going forward?
So I think a key one for us is really about continuing to pursue improved market access. Australia's got a really good track record when it comes to market access. We've got free trade agreements with a lot of our trading partners, but there's still a few free trade agreements we're pursuing at the moment as a country. So we're still facing fairly prohibitive trade barriers into the likes of Europe and also the UK, which is a separate opportunity in itself. So fortunately, the Australian government's pursuing free trade agreements with both the EU and UK, which have strong potential to improve red meat's market access into both those very wealthy and high-value markets. So yeah, it's a really big opportunity for the meat industry going forward. Other spots where we could pursue the likes of free trade agreements are potentially India when it comes to sheep meat or across the Middle East, particularly with the GCC countries. So there are still pockets where we can pursue trade reform and make sure that we've got access to a large array of markets. So if we do face increased disruption in one corner of the world, we can easily pivot and send product into other markets. While all these free trade agreements are well and good, the other critical part for the red meat industry is really pursuing what we call non-tariff barriers. And this is a wide range of issues that just make it very difficult to actually trade. So these could be things like in China having plants that are actually accredited to supply the market, or in the likes of Southeast Asia and the Middle East, having halal accreditation for certain plants, the certain fees, accreditation, and all kinds of additional requirements that are applied to our product when we export it overseas. And it, in many cases, even if we have a free trade agreement, these non-tariff barriers still make it very hard or prohibit trade entirely. So that's the other aspect, I suppose, of industry's trade reform priorities is really addressing these non-tariff barriers, which make it very difficult to actually trade.
And so what's the process, I suppose, you identify a particular barrier? Does someone come to you like and say, this is a problem for us, and then do you go to the government of the country involved and try and negotiate a way through that? Is it a diplomacy thing, or, you know, is it science? Like how? And when I say science, I mean, you know, do you go and get some evidence and then take it to the government to show them that this is not something that you should be too worried about, or how do you proceed?
The tricky bit with non-tariff barriers, or they're also called technical barriers, is that they're all different and there's no one-size-fits-all answer to any of them. And also at the same time, while we see it as a barrier, some countries may see it as a legitimate measure to ensure things like food safety. And given the vast array of divergent standards and things like integrity systems between Australia versus some developing countries, they don't always marry up. So there is always going to be this tension between what we'd like and what the importing country actually applies. But some of them are purely a barrier to restrict trade. But given the nature of these issues, we can't just take a one-size-fits-all approach. They're very unique, you know, on a country basis and also an issue basis. So MLA doesn't do this alone, and it's not even the lead agency in trying to promote non-tariff barrier reform. We have to work closely across the industry and also closely with our Australian government. But at times it might mean that we're commissioning scientific research to demonstrate the likes of Australia's high shelf life credentials in export markets, or it might be providing material and that industry voice in market to promote alternative ways of importing Australian product.
Is there an example of a technical barrier? I mean, you might not be able to talk about one that you're working on at the moment, but one that you've been able to dismantle or come to a better agreement on?
Yeah, there's probably a couple of good examples, but one that comes to mind, and it's actually been quite interesting to see how it's played out this year, but across the Middle East, Australian red meat has traditionally faced fairly restrictive shelf life requirements. So when we send a product into a market, by the time it's shipped there, it might only have a couple of weeks to actually be retailed and sold, which makes it very challenging to actually, for all parts of the supply chain to facilitate that product. And that's really been borne out in traditional local food requirements or traditional expectations around freshness, and particularly in the Middle East, all consumers like a fresh product. It's for those same reasons, it's really underpinned the live export trade to that region. So we've traditionally worked in this environment of fairly tight or restrictive shelf lives. COVID-19 for a lot of the Middle Eastern countries in the Arabian Gulf, known collectively as the GCC, were concerned about food security with disruption from COVID. So they looked at putting in place more accommodating measures for shelf life requirements. And MLA has been doing research and providing evidence on shelf life to some of these governments for a number of years, and working closely with industry and the Australian government to promote, I suppose, the credentials of the shelf life of Australian beef and lamb. So some of those countries in the region have put in place temporary or permanent changes to what they actually require for imported product in those markets. So I suppose this has been one win, and particularly, I suppose, current and topical given the COVID-19 context. But there are also many other NTBs that we're focusing on as an industry to try and reform.
I'm just wondering, would you say it's an expanding field? Like for people who are just beginning their career, they might be doing ICMJ at the moment or, you know, still at uni. Is this sort of work something you think that in the future is going to become, you know, even more important?
Yeah, definitely. I think the nature of trade changes over time, and also in the, I suppose, market access space, the priorities have changed over time as well. But trade and exports are always going to remain central to the whole red meat industry in Australia, and will probably become more and more central as our production base expands beyond the means of our domestic market. So I think exports and trade aren't going anywhere. I think the landscape and the politics on the free trade and WTO front could continue to evolve, and I think the likes of Trump and depending on how Biden takes it are a really good example of how that's changed in recent years. But also, as we deliver these free trade agreements, these non-tariff barriers are going to become probably more of a focus and more impactful on trade around the world. If anything, regulations are increasing as opposed to decreasing, and it's something that we have to navigate as we go forward. So there definitely won't be a lack of work to do in this space. It's going to remain very busy, I think, for years to come.
This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association to showcase the career paths within the meat processing industry. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn, building the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives into the future. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au.